Welcome back to Coastal Connection. I'm Brian Russo. Coming up in just a bit, we'll take you to a church in Pocomoke City that has taken the Christmas story and turned it into a live, interactive experience. But first, the tragic fire at St. Paul's by the Sea Episcopal Church shocked the entire seaside community of Ocean City a few weeks ago, when a homeless man with an alleged history of mental illness set himself on fire and ran into the church, severely injuring a female volunteer and sparking a fire that claimed the life of the church's beloved priest, David Dingwall. But the church's outreach and involvement in the community was not just the Shepherd's Crook part of the rectory where the fire occurred. The Red Doors Community Center has been offering classes to children and adults for more than a year, teaching everything from fencing and drawing to cooking and ballroom dancing. But in the wake of the senseless tragedy at St. Paul's, there are questions about where its community outreach programs go from here. So to find that out and to talk about the legacy that David Dingwall leaves behind, I sat down with Fawn Meddy, the director of the Red Doors Community Center at St. Paul's by the Sea. She said the congregation is still in the early stages of the grieving process.
First of all, the general mood is just heartbreak. People are upset over everything, you know, the people who were injured, the lives that were lost, the loss of our priest and rector. The church is like a family, and there's multiple communities that are a part of our church through the Red Doors and through the Shepherd's Crook and through the congregation of St. Paul's by the Sea, as well as people who just know us from the community and have had interactions with that building over the past century that it's been a major part of the life of Ocean City.
Yeah. Your role as the director of the Red Doors Community Center, basically that's an extension of the outreach and what St. Paul's does for the community. Tell me about that morning. I know on many mornings you're there at the Red Doors, but you weren't there that particular morning. Tell me just a little bit about that morning for you.
I wasn't there that morning. Normally, some mornings I'm there, sometimes I work from home. On a Tuesday morning, that particular morning, I was supposed to be there, and I was running some errands, taking my daughter to visit my dad, and I was late getting in. My office is right next door to Father David's office.
Father David played an integral role in the Red Doors basically starting and everything that it grew into. Tell me about those first conversations with Reverend David about getting the Red Doors started, what your vision was for it, what his vision was, what your collective vision was for the Red Doors Community Center.
Well, Father David had a lot of ideas about this, and I don't want to get myself into trouble by putting words in his mouth, but it's something that we had lots of conversations with, you know, in small groups, in committees at church, you know, in a larger sense. So I do have a good sense of why he felt this was something that we should do and why this is something, starting a community center and offering arts education and science education is something that a church would be involved in. A lot of it is that His mission and one of the missions of our church is to feed people in body, soul, and spirit. So feeding people in body, that's, you know, the Shepherd's Crook, the homeless ministry, making sure that the hungry have their needs met, feeding people who are part of the church as well, coming together in fellowship and having meals and groups and gatherings like that. Feeding people in spirit, obviously, that's what churches are in the business of, worshiping together, having a community, and the religious aspect of it. But people's souls, that's what makes us human, that's who we are, that's our creativity, that's our social interaction, that's what makes life worth living, and he didn't want that to be something that was neglected. So in our conversations, which started out just over coffee, and talking about school and education and arts and our children, he has children as well, and you know, some ideas just came forth about what we could do to reach out into the community and provide more opportunities, more enrichment for kids and for adults, and why that would be a good thing for us to do.
You know, my kids had taken some classes at the Red Doors Community Center, and I remember being in kind of the waiting room as the kids were taking classes, and it was the first time that I met Reverend Dingwall, and he came in, and he made some joke about the quality of the coffee that was being offered, and just such a warm gentleman. And since this tragedy, so many people have come forward and really spoken so highly of not only the man, but the reverend, the father, such a big part of this community. And there is such a sense of why. Why would something like this happen to a man like this, to a church like this? Tell me how you're processing, you know, not only this tragedy, but also the personal grief that you must be feeling.
You know, personally, it's just when anyone who is a part of your life that you care about dies, it's a day by day thing. I know his family. I'm friends with his wife, and you know, it's you want to try to help and support people in the best way that you can. But you know, professionally and as part of the church community, as a member of the church, and as in my job as the director of the Red Doors, the idea is to be true to his legacy and what he believed and what he was clear about in no uncertain terms throughout his tenure at St. Paul's by the Sea, which is to respect the dignity of every human being. That's something from the Episcopal Church baptismal covenant, and it's something that came up and was a guiding principle for him in everything that he did as an individual, his belief system, and you know, the direction he wanted to take the church's ministries, to respect the dignity of every human being. And that can be interpreted very broadly and in a lot of ways. In response to tragedy, I think what his response would be and what we should think moving forward is to respond to horrific acts and terrible things with compassion and love instead of anger and vengeance. That, you know, love and caring and doing the right thing are always the way to move forward and to the way to recover from something like this.
Now, certainly there was damage to the infrastructure of the church, the Shepherd's Crook area mostly. The Red Doors, the space of the church where the Red Doors holds most of its classes, was reasonably unscathed through all of this. But now, as I talk to people in the community, there seems to be an uncertainty about where not only the congregation but the outreach programs like what goes on at the Red Doors or Shepherd's Crook goes and where it goes from here. What's been the early conversations just for your portion of it, for Red Doors? What is the future look like for Red Doors?
There certainly is a lot of uncertainty about all of those things. I think that the leadership of the church, the board of directors of Vestry, has a very firm commitment to serving the community through both of those ministries. The rectory is the building that would normally house the priest and had, you know, offices, and the Shepherd's Crook ministry. I think the focus is on that ministry hasn't skipped a beat. It's continued, not in that location. But I think the focus is how to best serve the community and best serve the people who need it. And those are questions that will be answered as we move down the road. We've got physical limitations now, and there might be better solutions where we can do more in the future. But that's something that the leadership will have to decide.
It was such a new venture. Only, you know, a short amount of time has passed since Red Doors essentially just kind of burst onto the scene and offered all these hip and cool classes for kids and adults to come and take, and now seemingly the future looks very uncertain. For you, having started this with Reverend Dingwall, and now you're sort of carrying on his legacy and the mission of Red Doors kind of on your own, what do you hope to continue and what do you hope to grow the Red Doors Community Center into?
I certainly wouldn't say that I'm on my own. I have, you know, the support of our church community. The portion of the building where most of the Red Doors programs were offered is back up and open. We're opening January 6th. We'll be offering classes. We're doing our full winter schedule. We've had to make some modifications here and there, but we are, you know, moving ahead with that. I think that there's opportunity for growth and continued growth along the path that we had been on in the past. I think that the leadership of the organization wants his legacy to continue through the Red Doors, and I think that the community wants us to continue. I have had many requests from parents and people in the community saying, you know, when can we sign up for winter classes? When will you be back open? We continue to offer our fall classes in other locations, you know, throughout the area. There are people who opened their doors to us so that we could finish out our classes. And I think that the Red Doors has a broad appeal to a lot of people in the community. One thing that we had discussed recently, Father David and I had discussed recently, was that, you know, a parish, that's a church word, but it doesn't mean the people who go to your church. It's a geographic location. So our parish, St. Paul's by the Sea's parish, is Ocean City in the greater Ocean City area, regardless of people's faith.
Do you think part of the healing process for you is when the Red Doors essentially gets opened back up again and kids come in there and take the classes and adults come in there and it's sort of gets back to the mission that you are basically doing every single day. For you, is that part of the healing process from all this?
Absolutely. I think moving forward is always an important step in healing, and normal is good, and keeping things normal for kids, especially who are, you know, who come there for dance classes every week, who come there for art and crafts and come for science enrichment and music class and yoga and the things that they have as part of their regular routine. I think it's important to keep things normal and to move forward.
As we said earlier, so many people have been remembering Father Dingwall. You knew him very well. You knew his family very well. As you hear and you read and you see this outpouring of love and compassion and condolence from the community about your friend and your pastor, how do you hope this community remembers Father David Dingwall?
I hope they remember him as someone who was committed to a life of loving service, and that he wanted to make sure that things were good for all people, and he was smart and funny and kind and caring, and he really walked the walk, and he put his money where his mouth was, and he was extremely principled, and that shined through, and he was a great leader and a great example, and he did a lot for our community.
We've been speaking with Fawn Mehdi. She's the director of the Red Doors Community Center at St. Paul's Episcopal Church by the Sea. Fawn, thank you for joining me, and have a Merry Christmas and best of luck.
Thank you for having me, Brian. Merry Christmas.
We head now to Pocomoke City, Maryland, to the Lynn Haven Baptist Church, where for the past 7 years, they've been bringing the Christmas story to life. Literally. The Walk to Bethlehem interactive experience is a grandiose recreation of the birth of Jesus. And I was just one of hundreds of people lined up around the church to check out what I can only describe as a magnificently elaborate performance of what some call the greatest story ever told.
By order of Augustus Caesar, all the world should be taxed. Each subject shall return to the city of his father to be counted and pay his tax to Caesar.
A Roman soldier verbally bullies my group through the gates as we head into King Herod's palace.
We follow the star for many miles, come bearing gifts to the newborn king.
There's no other king here but me, King Herod!
Your Majesty, Your Majesty.
From there, each must pay the Roman soldiers a tax before going on to Bethlehem. And since I was out of shillings, I hung back and chatted with this lady.
Hi, I'm Lori Zimmerman. I'm children and youth minister here at Lynn Haven Baptist Church. It is quite an undertaking for our size church. We are relatively small. We've been doing this. This is our seventh year, and it takes from the first weekend of October to start construction and bringing all of the props and construction materials over. It's stored in an abandoned chicken house throughout the year, and then the first weekend of October, we bring all the materials back over to our site.
Now, tell me about the construction of all this. I mean, this is all, you know, real, you know, wood. I'm assuming it's perhaps salvaged wood that put it together. Who designed this and put this all together?
We actually got a script from somewhere down south, and we recreated it. One of our church members saw it, thought we could possibly pull it off, presented it to our pastor. He got some creative people on his team, and they started to work. Two instrumental people really make the details pop. Mark Frostrom Jr., he is a grounds architect, that's what I would call him. And then Carrie Ann Foster, she's the detail of all the shops. She collects pots and pans and fabrics and baskets and everything throughout the year with the Bethlehem in mind.
Yeah. Tell me what it means to the community to have something like this here in Pocomoke.
For our size town, I just can't say that enough. We had one gentleman just stop by last year. He had been to plays and Christmas productions throughout the Eastern Coast. Mm-hmm. And he stopped back by here last year with a check for $500 and a statue of the Nativity. Mm-hmm. And he was so impressed by our production here that he wanted to give us that token, you know, to be a part of it. We have probably 3,000 or more each year come through the production each year.
Yeah. You know? Tell me about volunteers and actual cast members and things like that. that? I mean, this is certainly, I mean, I'm assuming there's a lot of rehearsals that have to go into to get the story and the performances all spot on.
Our seventh year, the actors, the ones that are come back, mm-hmm. They pretty much know their lines, so there's not a ton of rehearsals. We have one dress rehearsal on Thursday night before all the production starts on Friday, but they spend a lot of time beforehand and off-site learning their parts and being a part of all that. So there's probably, 50 actors each year in it, but before all of the actors take their place, the guys that come to build it, it's remarkable, the volunteer service hours.
Yeah,
that
and these are all local folks.
They're all church members, yeah. Who give their Saturdays from October through this weekend with building and putting all the final touches. They line, there's wiring all underground. All these trucks of sand have been mm-hmm. brought in. These palm trees, there's a restaurant in Ocean City that has these palm trees all year long, and they don't survive, so they take them up. We have a gentleman that goes to the restaurant, puts them on a flatbed trailer, and brings them here and plants them in Bethlehem to just make it look so beautiful.
It really does. I mean, these palm trees really add quite an aesthetic to it. What's the reaction of people as they come through here, even people that have been here before?
They said it just makes their Christmas now. It's part of their annual Christmas holiday just to experience and especially bring their children mm-hmm. To really see what Bethlehem looked like.
As much of a production as this is really just an extension of the ministry that this church, you know, undergoes on a weekly basis or on a daily basis, really, in this community. To have this, especially for kids, for them to see the stories they hear about every Sunday, how much of an impact do you think that has on just the congregation as a whole, just to have this visual each and every year? Do you think it really means something to the kids?
Oh, I think it means the world. I work with children every Sunday and all throughout the week, and I love it when they actually see and can visualize. They don't even have to use their imagination. We are here. Mm-hmm. And for them to walk around the corner, there's a beautiful angel that lights up, that's a real lady that's way up high in the air. All the live animals, the town noises, mm-hmm. And then we go around the final corner, and there you see baby Jesus in the manger. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. You can see the live donkeys and the horses coming in. We right. have sheep and goats and pigs and live chickens that are on their perches. We have a fish shop that you can really smell and get the real taste of the fishermen of Galilee. We have a well that you, even as you look into the well, it's no joke. Everything is real to life and as authentic as it can possibly be.
What's your favorite thing about this?
My favorite thing is seeing the children.
Do you think that when they see it acted out on a scale like this, that they learn something new about a story they've heard a zillion times before?
Absolutely. It becomes not just a story. They can put their hands on it. They can touch the bread. They can see the inn where there was too many people and there was no more room. The innkeeper is saying, "There's no room here. Go away from here." It's just beautiful, the setting. I wish everyone could see it.
That was Lori Zimmerman, the children and youth minister at Lynn Haven Baptist Church in Pocomoke City, Maryland. To see an amazing picture of the manger at the Walk to Bethlehem interactive experience, click to our website, wamucoast.org. I'm Brian Russo, and you're listening to Coastal Connection.